Welcome to another episode of Crossing Soccer Borders, a podcast focused on the growth of CONCACAF soccer and part of the DynamoTheory.com podcast network. I am Rudy.
And I am Rodrigo.
Man, Rodrigo, it's been a long week. I feel like we did not record at all last week. It's just been busy. Life gets busy. I get busy. How was your week, man?
It was a good week. Kind of, I guess. We went to go watch the Astros play here against the Rangers. Astros ended up taking the first two games, Friday and Saturday. And unfortunately, we got to witness a massacre out there. Ended up losing 13-2. So, yeah, pretty bad. But overall, it was pretty good. Got some rest. And then just trying to keep up with all the transfer news all over the world, really. Mostly Europe, though. What about yourself?
It was good, man. Yeah, I saw that you went to the Astros game. My mom was like, "Is Rodrigo has to be here?" And I'm like, "No." Oh no, that was Diana. Diana was the one that was like, "Rodrigo's here," and I'm like, "No, they're playing over there." And I kept telling her, and she's like, "What? What do you mean they play over there?" I didn't even know Dallas had a team, so I had to tell her Dallas had the Rangers or whatever. But other than that, it's just been busy. But no, man, we have a lot of soccer to talk about today. And, you know, as a Houston fan, we're both right now repping our Houston Astros gear when we tend to always have Dynamo. But it was a good start of the week. And we'll definitely hit on that with GM's position pretty much open up. But Rodrigo, let's go ahead and jump into CONCACAF soccer. We have FIFA World Cup qualifier starting up this week. It's going to be crazy because there's three matches in 7 days. I mean, that's pretty crazy how, you know, 20% basically of the matches that will get, three teams straight in and a fourth place to play a playoff to try and make it to the World Cup, man. But what are you thinking so far? I know it's been kind of quiet in a way because I feel like we just got out of a Gold Cup and then it quieted down and then bam, qualifiers. But man, what are you looking forward to?
Yeah, definitely it's going to be interesting, you know, especially everybody just started up with their domestic leagues and then, you know, going from international to domestic and right back to international. And this is, you know, the top level right here that we're looking at to qualify for the last stages of the World Cup. It's going to be interesting, especially I know there's a lot of Europeans, clubs that didn't want to allow their players to go play in countries where they were red listed. So it's kind of interesting that take. And I think overall, FIFA ended up forcing most clubs to turn those players over. You know, unfortunately for the clubs, I think they'll have they have to sit out or be in quarantine for like at least 10 days before rejoining the clubs. So that affects them at the club level. But international wise, I mean, you know, CONCACAF, we're getting some pretty good matches right away. You know, we'll go over those. But yeah, it's going to be a good short or longest week for them.
Yeah, definitely. It's a lot of pressure, I think, on this 8 teams because they need to get results quickly. You know, 3 matches is 9 points you're playing for. That makes a big difference when you're trying to make it into those, you know, first 3 straight tickets. And of course, I mean, nobody really wants that playoff, but I mean, that's the only way that you can try to get yourself a ticket, at least, you know, half ticket. But I guess we'll go ahead and just focus on match day 1. I think we'll probably have enough time to record for the probably before or after match day three, but maybe we can do a special and go over the match day 2. But we'll hit start with Canada. Rodrigo, what do you think about Canada, about the roster they decided to take for this 3 matches?
Yeah, no, it's something that we kind of expected them going in. You know, this is actually going to be pretty interesting. They're here to compete. Canada is one of those teams that we see that they probably have an advantage when it comes to players since they kind of been growing over the last few years. So I'm excited to watch this team play. This is kind of what I wanted to watch during the Gold Cup. And unfortunately, we didn't get those kind of, players into the squad, but it's going to be good for them.
Yeah, and so they'll start this first match playing against Honduras. And they'll be playing at BOM Field, which is Toronto's FC stadium. And yeah, they have a lot of great players that, you know, obviously Alphonso Davies, like you mentioned, and Jonathan David, they were both out for the Gold Cup. And even then, they look very good as a team. So it's going to be very interesting, you know, like Canada this time around making it to this final qualifying stage for the World Cup, which we hadn't seen them in a bit. It's going to be very good to see how this young team looks towards, you know, their, this is kind of like their golden generation that they, you know, they haven't had in a bit. So it's a good mixture of youth and veterans. So it'd be good to see that. And I guess I'll jump into Honduras real quick. Let me double so obviously Honduras, a very good team also. However, they do have some injuries. I believe Albert Deliz was hurt. He went from playing from Boavista in Portugal's top league to the French league with Bordeaux. And sadly, he's going to miss out this three games that, again, they're very important. But they should have Romel Kyoto too, or back, not two. They should have him back just because he was hurt in a few of the last matches. Well, actually, the last match, basically. But Rodrigo, what do you see about Honduras and any team or any player that kind of stands out for you?
Yeah, the player that I'm more interested to see if he gets a starting spot or how they put him in is going to be the Kervin Arriaga. We kind of talked to, about him briefly in the pre-Olympic team. He was, you know, a big part of that. He's one of the younger players. I still think he has a lot of growth. And I think these matches are going to be key for him for his future, to see if he can develop and play in a bigger league. You know, hopefully he can follow some, you know, of the older players' footsteps and go into Europe, or, you know, maybe even come here to the MLS. Who knows? Maybe Bonilla can convince him to, you know, Dynamo needs new players, and we might get another Hunter in here.
Yeah, and that's definitely one thing that you mentioned, Bonilla Garcia. I mean, the dude is 37 years old, and you have Minor Figueroa, and they're still like making your starting lineup in the Honduran team, which they're not terrible players, but they're definitely past their prime. So in a way, to relying on those players is kind of hard. If you jump into the next matchup, which is Panama against Costa Rica, you have Panama with an intriguing squad. I think we had mentioned in a different episode about how they're just getting older. They just don't have the same squad that they had in the past regarding, like, basically who allowed them to be into the 2018 World Cup. You know, that has been the first World Cup that they went into. But Rodrigo, what do you see about this team? At least the squad called up for this three matches.
Yeah, like we've mentioned in the past, Panama does come with an older generation. You know, they're starting to, I guess, kind of has to start forcing some players out. Get some new faces in, and, you know, start growing more of their international team more than anything. So I think on paper, to me, this is one of the weaker teams we're gonna see just because of the age. I know a lot of people always say, like, oh, experience is probably better than youth, but at this point, the game, it gets too fast and too competitive. That it's good to have those players, but at the same time, they end up hurting your team. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and I think one addition or one of the players in the squad is Adalberto Carrasquilla, which is Coco, a new addition to the Houston Dynamo. And he's been a good player for them. We saw him play a lot at during the Gold Cup. And so far, it looks like he's slowly adapting into the MLS, which is, you know, fast-paced league. Very physical, and it's right now he's currently doing about 60 minutes that he's able to perform at a high pace. But Rodrigo, you want to jump into the Costa Rican team?
Yeah, Costa Rica, for me, they have a pretty solid squad. You know, it's kind of something we've been used to in the past. Their key players, I believe Kaylor's back, if I'm not mistaken. And everybody else, you know, they have pretty good experience. Do get a little bit older, but yeah, they've been playing at a top level. I can see this being one of the four teams, or at least the main three, that can qualify to the next stage. Definitely have to be one of the four teams, though, to, you know, seek their ticket into the World Cup. I like this squad. I think there's still, you know, a lot of good players that they have, and others that are growing. Well, yeah, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, man, I think this Costa Rican team is still, it's definitely past their prime. Some of the main players, like Celso Borges, Brian Reese, but they still have some young guys, right? They can still perform. Obviously, you have like players like Francisco Calvo, who we tend to mention a lot just because of the Houston ties. But they're just, I mean, Keylor Navas, obviously being 34 years old, the guy is still a very good player. So overall, I think they have a lot good team to compete. It's going to be interesting to see kind of how it pans out, throughout the entire qualification process. Of course, there's 14 matches, and usually by 10 matches, we kind of have an idea of the teams that are like going to qualify or not, basically. I will add, Joel Campbell has been playing pretty good. And I guess we have to mention the guy from Houston, which is Ariel Lassiter, who it seems that playing with the national team, he does a good job. He only has 16 caps and one goal. But man, he is terrible playing in Houston. The guy looks just lost. And I mean, that's just a topic that we may hit on later on, because that's a GM pick, I guess, or who knows, or a tad pick. But anyways, I feel like this team is going to fight, and they are three matches again against Panama. The first one, I could see a tie against Panama. That's going to be a good match. And then Mexico and Jamaica is going to be interesting for them. So with that, I guess we can jump into Mexico and Jamaica. So Mexico, man, Mexico has a lot of proof. We've, you know, kind of had episodes that we were just very disappointing in the fact that they lost to the U.S. two straight finals, which is very rare. They usually tend to split finals or split matches and why not. And so just damn, kind of definitely not looking up to par, even though they did play well, right? Overall, the tournaments they played well. But again, kind of like I said with Costa Rica, I feel like some of the players are just not in their, I don't know if they're prime, but they're just not a good level. Players like Jesus Gallardo and Chaka Rodriguez, they just look a little lost at times. But what do you want to add on Mexico, man?
Honestly, I mean, I'm glad like Mexico is having more of a young team. Overall, you know, they're trying to get rid of, or not get rid of, but their older players are, you know, not at the same fitness level, not at the same, not at the same level as they used to be before. Let's just put it that way. But, you know, especially like their defense, we can see that they're trying to rebuild it. I believe Carlos Salcedo got left out of this, as well as Hector Moreno. And for me, you know, Hector Moreno, obviously, he's probably would be the captain of our team now if Memo wasn't there, or, you know, it can go between any of them. But at the same time, you know, you have Carlos Salcedo, which he kind of made a lot of issues in the past or in the recent games. So I'm kind of glad they left them out. But, you know, like, I think there's younger players, and we talked about this before, but for me, Sepulveda, the center back, and he sometimes has to play left back for Chivas.
Let me butt in real quick, because those players that are replacing those two starters are players that, you know, we touch on. They're Olympics, right? They came from the Olympic squad. So I think, you know, them winning a bronze and going as far as they did in the Olympics obviously showed their quality, and that Tata Martino wants to see them in action in the qualifiers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously that we kind of already knew that. At the same time, we already kind of saw that they were going with a stronger team for the Olympics. So it kind of makes sense that, you know, you want to bring most of them up. But yeah, overall, I think they have a good squad. I'm excited to see Raul Jimenez back. I've been watching him play in the Premier. Man, I don't know how he does it, but he's still, you know, even with the team that they have, that they've been, I guess, depleted more than anything, he still managed to find, I guess, not the net, but at least, you know, get some shots off. He gave Menu a pretty tough time this weekend. Unfortunately, they lost, and he couldn't get the goal. But he's been playing really well, especially after that scary injury he suffered. And then Tecatito, you know, he's still top level. Excited to see him. And I guess the key pieces that we're missing would be Lozano and Linus, which I was excited to see all of this, I guess, a new Mexico team come together. But I guess we're going to have to wait for those.
Well, and even players like Johan Vasquez, right, that he had like a very good term in the Olympics, got loaned out to, I guess, Genova or in Italy. And so it's very good that they're giving the kid an opportunity to win a spot. So, you know, you can't just call him up. But, you know, obviously having Andres Guardado, the players that were out there, you know, had a captain because we looked a little lost without any really big leadership during the Gold Cup. So maybe this will give the opportunity for the players to kind of combine. But they are playing a Jamaica team that we've been going back and forth with some jokes on some of the players that they have here. But it's good to see them calling players that we mentioned, like Michael Antonio, right? So having players like that, that we've mentioned how Greenwood would be a great addition. But Jamaica always has like a ton of players that for me, I feel like they decide kind of late to go into the Jamaican national team because they're trying to get into like the either, you know, England or some other, mostly England, really. But it's great to see players finally decide to play for Jamaica. I think a very good player was like Ethan Pinnock. I think he was a very good defender that we talked about being from Brentford. And it's good that they have him. And of course, there's going to be plenty of others that pop up. But Rodrigo, what do you see about Jamaica? And what are you excited to see during this three matches, at least? Maybe not against Mexico. We don't really want them to because we're going to be biased and Mexico needs to win everything. But but anyways.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to see what their forwards are going to look like. You know, Leon Bailey got to sit out the last Gold Cup match against the U.S. That would have been exciting to, you know, give him a little more of a fight. Maybe it would have gone a different way. Mikel Antonio, you know, just got called up. I think that's a great opportunity for him. You know, so this team actually, on paper, I think it has a lot of promise. You know, their defense is solid with Andre Blake in the back. But overall, I hope most, and I'm not, you know, I guess I'm being biased here, but I think I did see that some players are mostly going to play for the Panama game and not against Mexico right away, which is kind of odd. I think Mikel Antonio is one of them that for some reason he's not supposed to play for the Mexico game, unless that's just how they wrote it. But it clearly said he's going to be playing against Panama. So I don't know. I mean, I guess we're just going to have to wait and see who their starting lineup is. But I think they're starting to put together a pretty good team here.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be exciting to see that team go and face whoever they're going to face. But Rodrigo, I guess we'll hit the last one, man. El Salvador against the U.S. You want to touch on El Salvador and the Selecta? And what do you see about that team?
El Salvador... they're going to be playing with a lot of local talent more than anything. A couple of players from the MLS, like our own Darwin Sarin, and then you have Alexander Roldan making, you know, the squad as well. But for the most part, most of the players we're looking at, they're all going to be majority from El Salvador. So I'm not expecting that much from them, just as they kind of have been rebuilding in the past, trying to bring new faces, new players in. So for the most part, I don't know exactly what to expect. I do think, you know, even playing at home in El Salvador, it's going to be very challenging for the U.S. But at the same time, I think, and we'll talk about them, but the U.S. Has an excellent squad that can honestly take this team and any other team, take some points away from, I guess, playing away.
Yeah, for sure. And I think overall, El Salvador team has like, you know, 80% of the players that did a good job in the Gold Cup. They started out pretty strong. Obviously, they ended up kind of suffering later on. But when you mentioned like Darwin Sarin, obviously he's been very good with El Salvador, right? Like the whole tournament, he's probably their best player. I was trying to get an interview when he got back, but he got busy. And, you know, pretty much everybody and their mama was interviewing this guy because, you know, he's the face of El Salvador currently. And they were just kind of saying like how they were like the darling of the tournament, how they were just doing a good job. And, you know, then he got back to Houston after they eliminated. And for him personally, I think he's going through like a struggle of, I mean, Houston has been doing terrible and we'll hit on that. But even last match, he ended up leaving injured. So it seemed like it was like, you know, kind of like it was going to be like a bad injury. But it seems that it was just, what is it called? A sprain, I think, MCL. And so he may not even play the first match against the United States, but I'm sure we'll see him against Honduras or Canada. But when it comes to it, I mean, players have showed up, or like Alex Roldan obviously has been pretty good. Eric Zavaleta from Toronto FC. I mean, the dude is a baller. And I think one was Joshua Perez that ended up doing a very good job during the tournament. So this team, it's you know, Salvador is always soccer is big there, right? But they're not the most talented to an extent. I mean, the last World Cup they made was back in the 80s. So they're what Salvador has is heart, and they're very scrappy. They'll get, you know, the opportunities that they're able to find, they'll try to finish them. And I think that's kind of how they're going to play. The good thing for them is they played the U.S. in El Salvador, which what helps that is just the field, right? Field conditions. You know, a lot of this American kids, and I guess it's a good transition to talk about them. A lot of those kids come from, you know, playing in beautiful facilities, perfect, you know, grass, perfect, just everything. And that is not the case when you play in Central America, right? Like, we know that even like their number one stadium is not a top stadium at all. And the fans don't make it even harder on them as well. And so, yeah, it's going to be fun. But to watch that, just kind of those two world collide, right? But Rodrigo, I guess go ahead and jump at the U.S., man. What the squad looking to you? Or are you excited to see this squad, or what? You know,
and for the U.S., like we know, recent Gold Cup winners, and it just brings me to, I guess, the same disappointing point that we had made before, that even if that team, and they did, which they did, but when we said even if this team wins the Gold Cup, most of them are not going to be in, you know, World Cup qualifiers, or even, you know, if the U.S. makes the World Cup, they're not going to be there. That's exactly just that. I believe only four, maybe five players actually made the team from that squad that won the Gold Cup, which to me, that's pretty sad. I expected more, especially because most of those kids deserved it. For me, you know, Busio, I think he needs to be in this squad. He's one of those players that you need to grow, especially now playing in Europe. I think he just needs to continue to grow. He was excellent for Kansas City, and I think, in my opinion, I think we need to see more of him. But I mean, overall, we're just gonna see what we expected. Most of the European players are coming back to this team. I'm kind of excited to see who's gonna be their main goalkeeper. I know Zach Steffen, he should be the number one, but after Ethan Horvat and the League Cup that they are, yeah. It sounds weird, but that they played Nations League. Mexico.
I know
Nations
what you're talking about.
Yeah. Nations League Cup. You know, he had such an excellent game against Mexico. I think he deserves to be in the starting squad right away. And honestly, Zach Steffen hadn't really looked that, you know, outstanding, to say the least. But overall, you know, you have Weston McKennie, Serginho Dez. You got all the main players. I believe Christian Pulisic is injured again. I don't know, man, dude. That guy, he just goes in and out of injury. Just kind of hard to tell when he's fit and when he's not. I hate to say this, but Ricardo Pepi has been playing well for Dallas. You know, it's an excited young player to, you know, make this squad. I don't think we'll see much of him. If anything, just maybe the last couple minutes, you know. But you have Josh Sargent, which just made his move to the Premier with Norwich. So it's a really competitive team. And to me, looking at the squad on paper and how well they've been playing, this should be the one that will make it first place in the group without a doubt. Probably maybe losing some points against Mexico or some points away, but I don't think they'll lose really any matches.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, this match in paper is probably, you know, if you go on FIFA and you look up these players, they're probably going to be your best players, right? At least 90% of them. I still don't like the fact that they hasn't been like a continuation. You know, obviously from Nations League, they won it and they did a great job playing those two, three matches. And then you would have liked to see a lot of the same players kind of go to the Gold Cup, maybe at least half of them. But no, he started fresh off. And then those people that won the Gold Cup are not really here. There's maybe a few, like I said, I think there's, I was counting them. There's like 15, 16 players that did not make the squad that were on the winning Gold Cup team. But I mean, this is one of those that you know, if you are able to do this, what the U.S. is, right? The U.S. has plenty of players playing in very good divisions. And I think that's one thing that whenever we emphasize, you know, obviously the U.S. against Mexico, the U.S. has done a very good job of allowing their players to go and play for lower teams and in good leagues, right? You know, they make sure that, you know, they send somebody that plays in, you know, the best team in Austria, right? Like, you know, Austria is not a top league in Europe, but when you're playing on the best team, you know, it gives you the opportunity. And in this case, I'm referring to like Brendan Aaronson, you know, 20 years old, it gives you the opportunity to be playing either in the Champions League or Europa League, and you're playing and you're able to play better teams. So eventually you can make a jump elsewhere. I saw that the guy that did really good, what's his name? Matthew Hoppe, I think was his name. He just got moved to Mallorca, you know, and that's definitely like a, Stuart Holden move, right? Because Stuart Holden owns a little bit of Mallorca. He probably was able to pull some strings and get that kid there. And, you know, who doesn't want to play in La Liga? Who doesn't want to go and play, you know, against top teams? And eventually, and like most of these kids, they are in great teams, right? You have a Giovanni Reina playing in Borussia Dortmund, right? We have a Weston McKennie playing in Juventus. You have a Christian Pulisic against Chelsea. Like, on and on and on about all these great players or good players playing in good teams and getting action. I think that's a thing that a lot of other nations in our CONCACAF region are missing, right? They have, you know, Mexico, for the longest you had Chicharito or Carlos Vela like in good teams, but they weren't playing, or, you know, they were stuck playing as super subs, or they're just not playing at all. And they were getting, you know, media, especially there in their nations, was just completely killing the fact that, oh my God, why are you bringing that player? He's not playing. And then they still played well. They were performing, they were scoring. Currently, that's not the case. I think they're going through this weird phase in Mexico where they're trying to find a new identity, because obviously a lot of the players that were there are gone. And the U.S. is in a perfect spot, right? Most of the, I think the oldest guy is like 28 years old, maybe. I mean, they're like in a perfect cycle that they're able to have so much youth playing in good teams. I mean, you really think about it, and you have, you know, Serginho Des, you know, left back, starting as left back, wait, right back, starting right back for Barcelona. I mean, that's pretty incredible to be able to have that opportunity. So for these kids, qualifiers, I mean, they've proven that they can win, you know, playing in tournaments. This qualifiers is going to be a whole different thing for a lot of these kids. Like I mentioned, playing in Central America is not going to be easy. You know, playing in places like El Salvador, Honduras, or Costa Rica, you know, it's a whole different beast. COVID has obviously put a little bit of a, you know, I think we had talked about it somewhere, you and me, about how away games weren't really a thing, right? Like, as in like the away team, sorry, would come in and just beat the home team as a Dynamo. But, you know, with not having fans and regulations, it makes it easier. But with things kind of finally slowly trickling into, you know, having fans in the stadiums, they're going to get a good perspective. And even one of my favorite radio stations in Houston, or actually shows, was The Blitz. And it ended a couple weeks ago. And on the very last show that Fred Fowler was there, he had Brian Ching as a guest. And he was telling him, like, you know, how did he feel about the U.S. if they were like walking into the World Cup and winning? And that's what he said. He's like, they are very talented. I think they'll make it, like, you know, no problem. But he's like, but it really depends on how a lot of these young guys cope playing in Central America. You want to add anything else?
No, I think you basically have hit everything on there. Yeah, like you said, players are coming in strong, starting from the U.S. side. But yeah, we'll see how they can cope with playing, I guess, out of their comfort zone, which is going to be in this, I guess, other countries where they're not the top most quality stadiums. And see how can they can put up with that. And also they're going to have to start, you know, which I'm sure they already have a good team chemistry, but they don't see each other that often as they should be, as a nation team would be.
Yeah. And actually that's one thing that I was going to point out in the very beginning of this. And you're right. I saw a stat that said that Pulisic, McKinney, and Tyler Adams together have only played about 100 minutes for the national team, like playing together. And of course that goes because, you know, it's one of them is always injured or vice versa, but those are very key players. I think that the U.S., those are very, what is they call them? Like generation players. And for them to only have about 100 minutes is pretty crazy. But yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see how it all kind of turns out. And that's as much as we're going to talk about CONCACAF soccer for now. Like I said, they play Thursday, Sunday, and Wednesday. So we'll try to get squeezed in the show probably between match day 2 and match day 3. And we should be able to break down or preview the matches as well. So exciting stuff, you know, 20% of the matches happening in a week. And I think we get like about a month break and then another 3 matches happen in October. So this will be like a quick stint of matches. So again, as your nations are trying to fight for a ticket for the World Cup. So exciting stuff, and it can turn pretty depressing pretty quickly. If they start, you know, with losing 3 matches or something like that. But with that, we want to go ahead and touch a little bit about our local team, the Houston Dynamo. They did some very good stuff. At least the owner finally stepped in and gave us what Rodrigo called ended the losing streak with this huge win that was finally getting rid of Matt Jordan, which I am one of those that I don't like to clap somebody losing their job, but this guy had to go, and he had to go a long time ago. You know, the fans came out, supporters came out with banners, definitely showing the fact that, you know, Matt Jordan had to go. It had been a long time, almost 8 years that the dude had been here running the show. There may be a lot of factors, right? We know that the owner beforehand didn't want to spend money. And, you know, we don't know. Behind closed doors, it could be like, hey, here's $1 million. Give me like 30 players. I mean, that's nothing, right? You're going to get nothing out of that. And so we don't know. But it was time for a change. This new owner seems like he wants to spend. And he listened to the fans, right? He finally heard the fans. You know, he's only been the owner for about a month. And I'm sure Matt Jordan was like kissing this guy's butt just because, you know, he's like the new boss and he knew things were going to get crazy. But he finally pulled the trigger, let the guy go. And actually, right before we started recording, legend Glenn Davis had his show and had Ted on. And I heard that he wants to open up like one big thing I think the Dynamo are missing is they were not really in touch with past players that were, you know, legends apart from like Brian Ching and stuff like that. I mean, so he opened it up to like, hey, we'll welcome everybody back. And so that's good news. I haven't gotten to listen to the entire thing, so I'll probably do tomorrow. So that's a thing to check out. But Rodrigo, where were your first thoughts, or, you know, when did, where were you when you heard the best news in a while for the Dynamo during this 15 winless streak?
I think like most Dynamo supporters, I was working, man. I just happened to take a quick break and I just open up, you know, Twitter is what I use for almost all media, all news, and right away it just pops up and I'm like, what? Like, I don't know, it was kind of shock just because everybody wanted this to happen. But honestly, just shows that Ted really cares, because he could have easily let his contract expire, you know, and for him to step in right now as he did, I think that just makes a big statement saying like, hey, this is unacceptable, making our fans obviously unhappy with the current status of the team, with a losing streak, or not even losing streak, just winless streak, you know, and people are just unhappy and they wanted him gone and he did just that. So I think that's a big, big thing for Ted, showing that he does, he is here for, to quote The Bachelorette, he's here for the right reasons. He wants to succeed with this team and win.
No, the funniest term that I heard the other day was like some big, like basically like when you're talking about like, you know, the big guy, the boss, the owner, whatever. They're like, yeah, some people just swing their meat around and make things happen. That's basically what I got out of Ted here. You know, like the dude is like, dude, I just bought this team. I got people wearing paper bags over their heads. I got supporters trying to fight each other. I got supporters trying to jump people. Like, it's just getting out of hand. So finally seeing...
I mean, for all we know, he was probably in a group text with all these millionaires. And he's like, hey, look at your club, bro. And they're just making fun of him. And they're like, dude, look. I'm just kidding. But who knows? Maybe that could have been it. And he's like, crap, I don't want this. You know, let me get rid of this guy. But he says I should fire him. You know, at least make the fans happy for right now. I think this is a good, you know, stepping stone, I guess.
But, you know, I mean, which is crazy to me because, you know, as soon as the news kind of broke out, and I mean, obviously this is day number two since it happened, but so many players, so many former Dynamo players literally like, we're talking about the team, which you hadn't seen them talk about the team in such a long time, right? Like you have players like Glenn or Brad Davis. I mean, even like, what's his name? Mike Chavala. I mean, the dude was vocal in the sense of like, it seems like they were just, you know, being former players. It seemed like they weren't really not allowed to the game. I'm sure they're able to go, but it's not like they were really genuinely welcome. Like this dude, probably, you know, Matt Jordan just didn't want to have that. He wanted to kind of run the show and not really give credit. But I mean, it just tells you a lot when former players are talking about the team and saying how, you know, things need to change, how they should definitely reach out to other former players, how they will do it for free, how they will basically all you should be doing from the very get-go, right?
I'm sure these players had voice or opinion to Matt Jordan and their staff and everything, and they probably didn't like what they heard. So they basically made themselves unwelcome, and that's probably why they're also agreeing with like, yes, things need to change, you know, and things need to get better for the Dynamo if they want to grow or if we want to grow. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I think right now it's too early to celebrate this, just because, yes, it's a good thing that he's gone. But at the same time, and I guess because other clubs have always put this into our heads that is this just a PR stunt where like, let's make our fans happy for just now, but we'll continue our ways of like not really improving. So I guess the real thing's going to come when we know Tab Ramos's fate with the team, and also what players are coming in and what players are leaving.
Yeah. And that's talking be the about, biggest thing. I do want to touch about like the fact of Tab Ramos. In my case, I've said this and I'll stay with it. He's not the coach that we need. I feel like he's kind of below par being a youth coach, you know, with not much experience. I mean, if you would tell me he was like a U23 coach or an Olympic coach, it'd make more sense because a lot of those kids are already playing in professional and probably getting a ton of minutes already. But in that aspect, you know, that's a whole different thing that maybe we'll have to touch in a different episode. But going back to Matt Jordan, I feel like I don't know if you have gotten the opportunity to look into like Houston Dynamo, like the statement or the release statement that they took out, you know, basically saying how majority owner Ted Siegel decided to part ways with this guy. But everything that they mentioned obviously is past, and it's like they make a mention of like how he brought Manotas or he brought Elise, and a lot of those players, I feel like the coach that was here before Tab, you know, Cabrera, did such a good job of like picking exactly who we wanted and being making the deals happen. You know what I mean? Like he had connections. I mean, the dude was a World Cup player, played for Colombia. So the dude had connections. And I think that's one thing that is noticeable when players that you have Darwin Quintero, right? They made such a big deal how Matt Jordan pulled this off, you know, basically got him like a couple days before you even announced Tab Ramos. So definitely not someone probably Tab Ramos necessarily wanted and is seen because he's not playing this season. And there's a bunch of other players, right? That like, dude, if Funmayor is not playing, get rid of him. Like, try to get him something instead of just letting him sit on the bench and let contract just go to waste. And that's something that you need a good GM for that, right? Like, you need a GM that's able to see that. It's like, hey, my coach is needing this player and he doesn't need this player. What can I do to get some money out of it? Instead of, like, I feel like we're just wasting money on players. Again, you could have sold Manotas for like $6 million. You could have sold at least for like $7 million, but you didn't want to sell them. You wanted to keep them. The players already wanted to go. You know, they want to be able to move on. And sadly, there's a guy, Finister from the Dino Pod podcast. And the dude was, I was listening to actually Christian did like a little town hall thing and he was in it and he was saying how, why can't we be like Dallas? I mean, yes, we have more titles than Dallas and they're not even as good right now. If you look at the table, but it's like, but at least they're selling players, right? They're like being able to invest on the youth, send their players to Europe or whatever, get a couple million back and just keep doing that. Sometimes it sucks. It sucks when your favorite player leaves, right? It sucks when like you're, you know, we're not a Liverpool. We're not a top league. Or in our case, we're not a Seattle, you know, we're not. Go for it, man.
I was just going to make a joke. I was going to say, don't bring Liverpool into this because right now it's the same thing. Management, FSG, everybody wants them out. And I think this is when it falls. See, this is the same scenario, I guess, what Liverpool has been going through, the Dynamo has been going through, which they're not buying players unless they sell players.
Well, but wait. I don't want to talk into Liverpool. You're right. But what I was trying to say though, and hitting that is the sense of like, you're not a top tier team, you know, like if you take Mexico, you know, we're not even an Atlas. Like I would love to be an Atlas. Like, okay, we haven't won a freaking title, but at least my players are, you know, I can sell them, make money, or you're a Pachuca. Obviously Pachuca lately hasn't won a lot, but you know what I mean? Like,
and right, no, I was just making a comment.
Yeah, no, when I'm saying,
still like, kind of heated with the transfer.
But like whenever you're a top dog, like top tier, you know, it's not a big deal for you to be selling your youth. Like Barcelona, like their youth system goes through their pipelines and eventually they suck and they get rid of him for pennies. I feel that in a way is kind of what's going on with the Dynamo, right? Like they don't get money out of the player they develop. That's what I was trying to go. And if anything,
I was gonna say in that sense of developing players, I think, and I know Ted had mentioned about like trying to develop more of the youth, but in this scenario, I think we do have the perfect person to develop the youth programs and everything, and that right now is our head coach. I think instead of firing Tab, I think he just put him in, like, hey. We'll want to keep you around, but
because you're gonna have to demote him. Do you think he'll stay? I don't know. That's a big issue, though. Because
that's at least a little bit bad. I mean, okay, he's not doing a great job.
He's not.
Who wants to hire?
And he's not even playing the youth.
You're telling me right now he has a contract with somebody else after seeing this season that he can't get a win. He doesn't have a job. He's going back to youth. At least at Dynamo, like, hey, we like you enough to give you a job here. And we want to bring academy players. We want to make those players succeed like you have with the U.S. national team, you know, those kind of programs. I think that's a win-win for the club and for him.
And actually, you know what? I thought that he had more time. I thought he had gotten a 3-year contract, but that's not the case. It actually expires December 31st of this year. So they could easily
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. Like, I think we talked about it last time too, that his contract expiring and Matt Jordan's was expiring too.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, interesting to see, okay, what is he going to do? You know, him firing Matt Jordan made a big statement, but now with Ted, at this point in the season, honestly, it's still pretty close.
Well, and I mean, you think about it.
Three wins gets you back into the middle of the table.
Yes, like, yes, I agree. Three
wins in a row gets you back into the middle of the table.
And how many of those ties that we've had could have been losses and how many could have been wins? I mean, it's probably about the same, right? I mean, I know they say a lot about unlucky and being unlucky. And I mean, even last match that we lost at home, they hit the crossbar like a bunch of times or had a few opportunities or whatever. And but it just kind of like it drives you nuts because you want to be able to like Ty Ramos. Ty Ramos looks like a cool dude, you know, it'd be nice to hang out with him, have a good talk. But at the end of the day, like you see his tactics and I feel like there's nothing. It's more like this is how I play. I want possession. I want high press. And that's all I want. You know, I feel like I think a good tactician, a good manager knows like they have to change every single week or every, you know what I mean? Like every team that you play against is going to show something different. So, hey, you know what? Yeah, go for it.
It's just about adapting.
Right. It is.
It's not really just about changing every time we're seeing.
No. But that's what I'm trying to get.
So like if you're going with a high press and possession, which honestly, I mean, I know that from watching Liverpool every single week, but that's exactly what you want. You know, if you can't do that, then yes, you have to adapt. But him, I don't know, like you said, the tactics, he just kind of sticks with something and be like, okay, let's just try to see if this works. And obviously it hasn't for the last, 16 games, 15 games. And I don't know, his mentality with all this making subs, how many subs did he make against Alice? One. You have five still. You can make up to five subs, like one, and you think that's okay. And just because your goal came in and it's like, okay, well, we tied it. Let me just make one. No, this is the time that, and, you know, I can go back to me playing
you're absolutely right.
Seven, the coach I played for at San Jack, he did a whole thesis statement for his doctorate on how basically a goal happens, you know, different times during the game. Usually it's the first 5 minutes, the last 5 minutes of the half, the first 5 minutes of the second half, the last 5 minutes of the second half or till the end of the game, or right after a goal, like the 5 minutes right after a goal. So like this would be the perfect time. Hey, we scored. They're not thinking, you know, like they're still trying to recoup what happened from the goal. Just putting a bunch of guys and just go at it. And you might find the second goal right or the third goal right.
And I think that's exactly like a vicious circle. I mean, think about it. I mean, again, you know, you go through, I mean, every coach, and I've said it, even if you don't have ever done it, you know, even if you haven't coached like 5-6 year olds, because it's the same thing at the end of the day, you know, when it comes to like setting up your lineup, in the sense of like, when you play FIFA, you have like your 11 players you want to start with. Right. You always have like, this is who I want. But even when you play career mode or something like that, you have to make subs, man. Like you have to be able to, you know, injuries happen. You have to do it. You're not doing it because your team is perfect. You're doing it because you want to give opportunity to people in case there is an injury. You're able to slot that guy and he's good to go. But when Top Ramos, you ask him about subs, he goes like, oh, well, I didn't feel the team needed it. It's like, dude.
See, and I think that goes back to the youth mentality. So, like, you know, and I can bring this back. When I was playing college at San Jack, our coach, excellent coach, you know, you can never have a complaint from him of not being, you know, disciplined and, you know, his tactics and everything work. But in a college university style, you have unlimited subs. He would still play with a 3-sub rule. We have unlimited subs. Players get tired. Just put in anybody. But his mentality was like, well, I'm trying to build professionals here, which, you know, to his excellent work, he did that. You know, some players made it pro, but at the same time, it's still you. We're playing teams where they put in a whole new team, another 10 players in, and we haven't even made a sub. And I feel like this is how Ramos is. It's like, oh, well, this is the team I like. This is my professional team. If I need to make a sub, I'll make it. But the other team already made 2 subs starting the second half, knowing that they still have 3 to, you know, warm up to. And Tab is over here like, it's at the 80th minute yet. Let me see if I can bring somebody in now. it's too late for that. This is exactly how you get, you know,
yeah, you
that
can
many
give,
losses and ties.
Like, you can put your most creative player, which obviously he hasn't even played in the league, which is Quintero. But at the times when he would put him in, he would put him in for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And people are like, well, he's the top player. 5 minutes is a lot for them. No. When you have a creative player that wants the ball at his feet and you give him 5 minutes and he gives a couple touches, and like, do you expect him? I mean, he's trying to be creative, but you give him 5 minutes.
And everybody's tired already at that point.
And
just
to that,
you to be the Messi and be like, hey, take on the whole team. Like,
exactly.
It doesn't work that way.
It
you
does
know?
Not
like,
work
the
that
other
way.
People have to still be active and playing.
And on Twitter, I mean, I've been, like I said, I think that at the end of the day, I don't see Tab Ramos. I mean, I don't see Tab Ramos being here next season. And obviously, the assistants as well, I don't see them being here next season. So, like, Amid is learning from Tab. I mean, I was at the game, right, against who the hell did they play? I watch all the games and I always forget. But this weekend that they played, right, here in Houston, and you could see physically, you know, I'm right there in the stadium. I understand sometimes it's a little bit harder to watch it on TV because, you know, they tend to focus on certain players or they don't zoom in on everybody. So being there, you physically see Urruti completely gassed out by the 65-minute. And they do subs and they put in creative players, right? You get to finally see Pasher after a while. I mean, dude is explosive. I mean, they put Ari Lassiter, but that dude, give me a freaking glass of water. I'd take that over freaking him and Dynamo. But they take out Coco. It's like, that's your most creative player right now. You don't have, I mean, you see him with the ball. The dude is slick. He has very good control. I mean, he's 21, 22 years old. And so what I'm going is like, you're putting in Pasher, you know, somebody to help out the load. And when you physically see a Urruti completely emptied, you know, running on fumes, and he's in the game still. Like, dude, are you not watching the game? Like, everybody's watching the game, yet you're not taking out the one guy that looks extremely tired and you leave him there. And you put him to play the position Coco is playing. Like, to me, it makes no sense. Like, whenever you make subs, you got to see it as like, hey, I'm putting an explosive player that can bring me a counterattack. So I'm going to leave my most creative player that has a very good vision and hopefully he finds them and, you know, and an opportunity and we score. And little things like that, that this is, to me, I mean, you were there watching the game and seemed like it was Tab still on the bench. Like, the things were happening the same way. Same exact lineups day in and out. And I think overall, maybe we're, you know, don't have the most expensive players and probably the most talented players, but we do have a good enough player that I feel that can compete, but they just need the right coaching. They need to have rotation because that creates competition. I mean, dude, that's one of the big things the coach has to provide, competition. And let me just finish my thought. And, you know, being able to go into when Cabrera was the coach, and I got to go into like kind of see the stadium and go through like the locker room and why not. The guy walking was like, yeah, this is the chart right here that, you know, every match, one thing about Cabrera that he does compared to other coaches that they've been there, he's like, he would give the starting lineup literally 30 minutes before the match because it wasn't. And I feel the opposite is here. Like, we know Tim Parker is going to start. We know, you know what I mean? Like, you know, players are going to start. And it's like they play like they know. It's like, dude, no one, who's going to take me out? Me? I'm Team Parker. Like, you're not going to bench me. And I feel that you feel that vibe. You feel that they're there, they work. But at the end of the day, they're not putting all their heart and soul into it yet.
Well, and honestly, I think that's how most coaches take it into hand. I mean, yes, they have to submit their official lineup, I think, an hour before the match starts. But even doing that, you know, that says a lot because you still put in a lot of trust into those players. Once, you know, you let them know, it's not like something that's, oh, you're here because you've been here the longest. But something I wanted to bring up is, so I remember when you got season tickets, we went to the whole like meet and greet, but the whole team felt like a family. I mean, I remember, you know, like the, you know, with Cisneros when he was here. Felipe Senderos, you know, you had, I think, Funmayor had just gotten here. You know, you had a couple of people that, like, everybody seemed like a family, though. And, you know, Wilmer did a pretty good job of, I guess, either putting the team together or making it seem that way, even for the guys that literally had just gotten there. But it was fun to be around them. And I see this team, and yeah, it looks like they have fun, obviously, because they're, you know, for the most part, playing every single day the sport that they love. But as a team, they don't look like as a team. They look like, okay, we're here to do a job. And, you know, I get it. It's disappointing having this winless streak.
And I mean,
going.
I'm sure they don't seem close to each other. I was just going to say, I'm sure that obviously not winning during 15 games puts a lot of stress on you and, you know, makes it uncomfortable. But you're right. I mean, one thing that Cabrera was different than Tab is Cabrera was very tight. You know, he didn't want any media during practices. He didn't want media to, you know, bombard the players with questions and this and that. And it sucks as a media person for sure. And it sucks as a fan because you feel like you're kind of being left out. You really don't know much. And it's been the opposite with Tab, right? Tab allows media, any player basically that you want to interview, you're able to interview. But at the same time, it creates more pressure, especially when things aren't going your way. I mean, I'm sure, you know, players that step up to the mic pretty much every week, like Sadiq Ballantyne, is probably tired of saying, like, we're trying. But then you also have, like, in the past that we've had Tim Parker be interviewed. And I it seems like I'm picking on the guy, but it's like, you're the captain, right? Like, your words mean a lot. And for you to kind of a couple of weeks back say, oh, we're not really worried about it, it's going to work out. It's not good enough. Like, as a fan, you do want to trust the process, but you want to, like, for the players to want to win as bad as you want to win, right? I mean, this is a team that is representing your city. So you want to be able to see them show up and why not. But anyways, I feel like we rambled a lot. Do you want to add anything else before we conclude this episode?
In Ted, we trust.
And Ted, we do trust for sure. And, you know, actually, before we go, I do want to give a shout out. I don't know if he listens to our show often, but I want to give a shout out to Edson. I don't know if you've seen Edson Ochoa. Dude was probably one of the first Dynamo related podcast that I listened to. It seems like they stopped the peel. I think everybody got babies, and then Edson actually moved back home to be in RGB area. And but the dude is always repping and giving us shout outs, and it's kind of good that he gives some recognition. I know that sometimes it feels like we don't have not listeners. I feel like we do have listeners, but you know, it feels like you didn't get a ton of feedback, and so his words are very encouraging. And as well, you know, want to mention about Christian with 442. He's doing some fantastic stuff. Obviously, he tries to stay local and hit on the Dynamos more. And he's doing a monthly, which was funny because he called it a monthly, but he's done it 2 weeks straight. But he's doing like a town hall type of thing. So if you join Discord, and he'll kind of mention when it is, but then basically like talk anything Dynamo. Obviously, he did a special one because this whole Matt Jordan kind of made everybody happy, and it feels like it's a good time to be a Dynamo fan, even going or being last place currently. And as well, lastly, just wanted to mention to check out dynamotheory.com. The guys there try to write a ton of articles or keep tabs on all the matches for the Dynamo. And for us, we actually we're gonna give some tickets away. They're actually my season tickets. We are not season tickets, but only for one match, guys. Chillax. And for Friday, what is it, September 3rd? I don't have it in front of me. Is that right? Does that sound that right? Third or second? Third, September 3rd, the Dynamo will be playing at BBVA Stadium against Portland. And so I will be giving away some tickets. So the way you do that for a chance to win it, it's check out our Twitter feed and our Instagram feed. And again, you know, you guys show us a lot of love. So just keep retweeting, liking, and, you know, letting people know about this podcast that me and Rodrigo try to knock out our love for CONCACAF soccer and Dynamo, of course. And, you know, there's plenty of soccer that we like to talk about, EPL, Liga MX. But we try to focus on one thing here. But Rodrigo, with that being said, you good?
Keep crossing soccer borders.
Woo! Let's go.